Right now it is time to bring in Dr. Judy Werfman and Food for Mood. Judy is the co-author of the Serotonin Power Diet, serotoninpowerdiet.com on the web, also author of Simon Loses His Tummy, and she joins us from a balmy place this morning. Good morning, Dr. Werfman.
Good morning, and it is indeed balmy, although it certainly doesn't feel like Christmas with palm trees.
You know, I never had, I remember being in California at Christmas time and seeing the palm trees and just not being able to make the, you know, they had all the glittery stuff and they had the stars and everything, but it just didn't.
It's sad, and also seeing people wearing bikinis with a Santa Claus hat. Somehow, it doesn't compute.
It doesn't, Allure. So.
Anyway, Jill, I thought, even though this is still the holiday season and people are busy eating and drinking, you know, to celebrate the holidays and not worried too much about what this might do to their body and you know, their weight on the scale, that eventually, in a couple of weeks, people will be thinking about dieting, because January is the diet month, although it usually doesn't last until February. And I thought one of the things that people should consider, whether they're planning to go on a diet or not, or whether they're just concerned about eating healthier, for example, is the impact of what they're eating, in particular what they're not eating, on their bones. And this came to mind because of two events that happened in the last couple of weeks. One was somebody that I hadn't seen for a while, saw her at a social gathering, and she had lost, obviously, a great deal of weight. I mean, she was skinny, and I looked at her, and her arms and legs were quite thin. And she always was sort of she was short, always short. And, you know, I looked at her and I thought, wow, you know, she looks like she may have some problems with her bones. And anyway, I started talking to her a few minutes later and just sort of casually asked what she was eating to have lost all this weight. And she told me, you know, that she had cut out dairy products among the various things that she had eliminated because she loved ice cream. Cutting out dairy products, she wasn't eating ice cream, and so that cut out a lot of calories. So I asked her what she was doing to increase her calcium intake or to maintain it. Oh, she said, I don't eat dairy, but I get plenty of calcium from vegetables. Well, I knew she couldn't, because unless you eat truckloads of kale, you're not going to get that much calcium, and you're also not going to get the vitamin D along with the calcium that you need to increase your bone structure. And looking at the lack of muscles on her arms and legs, I knew she wasn't exactly hitting the weight training circuit and building up all of her muscles. There were none that were particularly visible. And I looked at her and I thought, she is a bone breakage accident waiting to happen. As far as I know, her bones are still intact. But it brought to mind the fact, and I looked to some research on it, that petite women in particular, who have very small bones because they are small in any way, are quite vulnerable to getting osteoporosis, you know, a dreadful disease that causes fractures by sort of a whisper of a breeze that might just put you off balance. And here's a woman, she was in her early, I think probably about 70. Here was a woman who, again, was an accident waiting to happen. You know, she also fit other risk factors. She was a couple of decades from menopause. At menopause, women's estrogen levels drop considerably. That's one more factor that, when you have estrogen, helps you maintain strong bones. She was white. White women are more liable to have osteoporosis than dark-skinned women. And, you know, she obviously wasn't getting the calcium, vitamin D that she needed, or the exercise. Okay, so that's number one. Second of all, I'm doing some research about this, and looking at the kinds of drugs that one can take to help restore bone growth, and there are several of them, and they fall into a particular chemical category, and what they do is somehow work on the cells that produce new bone tissue, so your bones become stronger. That's the good news. The bad news is that several years ago, it was discovered that despite the fact that these drugs, Beneva and Fosamax, a couple of them, will make your vertebrae, let's say, stronger, for a small but real number of people, if you take these drugs for a while, you can have what's called jawbone death. a dreadful term, which means that if you have had some kind of dental procedure, like, oh, perhaps you have periodontal work with your gums, or you had a tooth extraction, some kind of injury, minor injury to your bone structure, let's say having a tooth extraction, your bone doesn't, your jawbone doesn't heal and instead begins to die. And the first signs that your jaw bones are dying is terrible pain. Well, I read about this. Oh, this is really terrible. And then I was speaking to a friend of mine who told me about a mutual friend who just discovered she had this. That she was taking a drug called Beneva, a very good drug, and she had had osteoporosis. And she had this terrible pain in her jaw. She thought it was some kind of a root, you know, an abscess in her tooth. She even thought it might be a heart attack, because for women, jaw pain can really be a symptom of a heart attack. But no, her bones were disintegrating. Now she has to have surgery to sort of put together that part of their jawbone that's disintegrating from this drug that you take for osteoporosis. Okay, number two. Three, I'm talking to another friend of mine who's telling me about her mother-in-law, who's in this really lovely nursing home, well, assisted living facility, on Sunday. Monday, I see this woman. She said, you know what? My mother-in-law just sort of fell. She slipped on the tile of her kitchen. She fractured her pelvis. Then she fractured one of her bones near the pelvis. And now she's going, and they can't operate because she's too old. She's 88 or something. They don't want to give her anesthesia. And so she's going. She's in horrible pain. I said, well, does she have osteoporosis? Oh, yeah, she's had it for years. Okay, horrible. And I'm thinking, all this is not necessarily preventable because you may have a genetic tendency toward it, but you certainly can take steps to make it less likely to happen. And it's one of those diseases that creeps up on you.
Right, because once you have it, once you actually have it, you know, you've got to, it's one of those things that can be. I'm short and small, so I know that it's something that needs to be worked on as you go, not once things start breaking.
That's right. In fact, the time that you're supposed to be drinking the milk or eating the yogurt, it's when you're a teen, because that's when your bones are forming most rapidly. I mean, you look at a 11-year-old girl and you look at a 15-year-old girl, the big difference in a lot of things, but including them, is bone structure, or for the same thing for a man. So that's because that's what teens don't drink milk, God forbid. They don't, maybe they have yogurt, they eat cottage cheese, probably not.
Well, I hate milk, so, by the way.
But you need the vitamin D, whether you get in the milk, you need
So you need cottage cheese or yogurt. And then the other thing about these very green vegetables I just want to go back to is some of them leach calcium, end up leaching calcium. So you've got to be aware of quantity, you know, it meaning balance, balance, balance.
That's right. That's right. And I think that not enough, you know, women hear about the spectrum of breast cancer, ovarian cancer, you know, we're tested for those things. But the problem is, how do you test for bone loss? You have to have an X-ray, and it's a 20-30 minute procedure, not cheap. You know, your insurance has to pay for it. You're not eligible until you're a certain age, like mammography, but even older. You have to be past menopause, way past. So how would you know that, let's say, if you were a 24-year-old and really had avoided dairy products all through your teens, how would you know that you might be vulnerable to this?
Yeah.
No way.
No, you wouldn't necessarily. And the other thing is, and this is something that I hope that we can work on in the next year, just because back to basics is always critical, is there's so much misinformation, bad information, distorted information, and divorced from common sense information. Such extreme information is, I think, what I want to say.
Oh, absolutely. And avoiding dairy products is one of the misinformations. It's going to cause mucus. It's going to cause allergies.
Yeah.
All sorts of things. Yeah, when you're lying in bed with your broken pelvis, just remember that those people who told you to avoid dairy products aren't around to get you out of bed and feed you some soup.
And take you to the loo and all sorts of other fun things. So
exactly.
It's just that's an important thing to focus on as well.
But, I agree. Okay, so here's to a year of less misinformation, right?
Yep, we're going to go for that. Oh. Why not?
Very good. Good talking. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much, Dr. Judy Wertman. Food for mood.